Now, let's take a look at the first key to conversation, the situation. We're always in one situation or another. We don't exist in a vacuum. Start by identifying yourself and your place in the situation. You can converse with others simply by focusing on different aspects of your immediate surroundings. This can provide you with an enormous well of conversational topics. Let's take the health club, for example. This is your first time there, and you finally signed up for that exercise class you've been promising yourself for months. Standing next to you in the class registration line is an attractive member of the opposite sex. Finding out what the other person hopes to get out of the class is a good place to start. After making eye contact and smiling at the other person, say hi and ask a question related to the situation. Be sure to volunteer some of your own goals for the class, too. The conversation might go something like this. Hi, are you signing up for the beginning racquetball class?
Sure am. I've been waiting to learn how to play this game right for a long time, and now I'm really going to do it.
Me too. I've always been curious about this health club. I drive by it every day on my way to work, so I thought I'd give it a try. Have you taken classes here before?
I took a swimming class last summer and really enjoyed it. The instructors were excellent, and I met a lot of nice people. Plus, I really learned how to swim.
Well, I'm glad you're giving the place a good report. I hope the racquetball class is good, too. By the way, my name's Don.
Hi, I'm Mary. Have you played racquetball before?
Not really. I played a little tennis, but it's been quite some time. I figured it'd be fun to learn racquetball. Plus, I want to find a regular playing partner, and I thought this would be a good way to do it. What about you? Have you played much racquetball before?
No, I played tennis, too, and a little squash, but not much racquetball. A friend of mine told me it's pretty easy to learn, and it's great exercise, so here I am. I think the class is going to be a lot of fun.
I'm curious. Do you know if the food in the club lounge is any good? I'm always starved after I exercise.
I've heard it's pretty good, but I've never tried it.
Well, if you're interested, maybe we could meet up after the class and grab a drink and a bite to eat. Treat's on me.
Well, sure, that sounds like a great idea.
All right. Here are some other questions based on this situation. What do you think of the club facilities? Or, do you know what other kinds of activities happen here? Or, how are the instructors? In my conversation with Mary, the interchange began with a focus of the class itself, and then moved to other racket games, to the food in the lounge, and finally to a planned meeting later. You may say that conversations like this don't really happen, but they do, and all the time. The second key to conversation is risk. It takes a certain amount of risk to be the first to say hello to a stranger. The biggest factor in people not starting conversations is the fear of being rejected by the other person. But let's look at it another way. No one likes being rejected, yet no one receives unanimous approval either. To be oversensitive to rejection will prevent you from taking risks. Hence, the shy person will take a passive rather than active role in starting conversations, even once the conversation has been started. If, on the other hand, you take the approach that you really have nothing to lose, you will discover you have very much to gain by being the first to say hello to a person you would like to meet. By being the first to say hello, you are actually sending this message to the other person. I'm interested in you and willing to talk. Introduce yourself to others you come in contact with on a regular basis and begin to share some of your ideas, opinions, and feelings with them. Seek out the other person's ideas, opinions, and feelings on different subjects, and your risk-taking will have paid off. By initiating more conversations, you will get more positive responses, and the fear of rejection will become less and less meaningful. However, sometimes people will not respond positively to your overtures. But this does not mean there's something wrong with you. They may not wish to talk for any number of reasons, none of which have anything to do with you. Don't let their non-desire to communicate keep you from reaching out to others. Taking the risk to start a conversation also gives you the opportunity to guide the direction of the conversation and gives the other person the impression that you are open and friendly. Remember, the other person may be as shy as you and just waiting for someone else to start things off. So don't disappoint them. Take an active role and be the first to say hello. Here is another tip for minimizing rejections. Look for people doing what you want to do, and when the time is right, approach them. For example, if you're at a party or club and you would like to ask someone to dance, look to those who are either dancing or showing that they would like to be dancing. Wait for the moment you think they may be most receptive to you, and then take the risk, and using good eye contact and a big smile, go and ask for a dance. If they say no, then accept it with a smile and ask someone else. The third key to unlocking conversation is curiosity. When you have eye contact and smile at someone, you are demonstrating your curiosity. When you take a risk and say hello and introduce yourself to the other person, you are demonstrating an interest in them. This is a compliment to the other person and makes them feel good at having been noticed. Your curiosity is sending this message. I'm interested in you and maybe would like to get to know you better. You can show interest and curiosity in others by seeking out their ideas, opinions, and feelings about different subjects, events, or situations. It is just another way of saying, tell me more about you. I'm willing to listen and share some of my ideas and experiences with you too. This sign of openness on your part will encourage the other person to express themselves to you and make them feel good about you and themselves. There are several ways you can express interest in another person. Stop and have eye contact and smile at them. Move to within communicating distance, about 5 feet or so, and take a risk, and in a polite but casual and friendly manner, say something like,
excuse me, but I just got to know, where did you get those beautiful shoes?
Or perhaps,
my, that ice cream cone you're eating looks great. What flavor is it, and where can I get one?
A compliment followed by a question that the other person will be able to answer easily is a safe and usually successful way to express your curiosity in another person and break the ice at the same time. Remember, your curiosity is actually a compliment to the other person. The fourth key to unlocking conversation is being aware of the two-way exchange and balance of information passing back and forth between the participants. Good conversation is actually at least a two-way exchange. It is very much like playing a game of catch. First one person has the conversational ball, talks, and then throws it to the other person. By tossing the conversation back and forth, the people talking can more or less balance the output and input of information about one another. You can give and take through talking and listening. Be sure to do both in a conversation. This allows people to get to know one another at about the same rate, little bits at a time. This also promotes trust and encourages both people to disclose more information about themselves. The better balanced the conversation is, the more likely the relationship between the people will flourish. Be sure to listen for plenty of free information given by the other person and use it to guide the direction of the conversation. The fifth key to unlocking conversation is just being yourself. It is important, in fact, essential to be sincere and not feel that you have to fabricate some fantastic characteristics about yourself to make others interested in you. Most people can sense when another person is putting them on and not being altogether honest with them. Although it may be tempting to paint yourself in a different light, when the truth comes out, and it will sooner or later, the results will be quite negative. The person will feel duped and made to look stupid. This will foster feelings of distrust and even dislike, and that's no way to make friends. Rather, present yourself in the most positive way you can, concentrating on your good points, especially those things you like to do or are working towards. Keep your more negative side out. If you become friends with this person, they will find out some of your more unusual qualities soon enough. Remember, you have the right to be who you are. And if a person won't accept that, then they probably wouldn't be worth the effort of developing a relationship. The sixth key to unlocking conversation is to seek a connection with the people you come in contact with. When you meet someone with common goals, interests, and experiences, you have the building blocks of a developing relationship. Seek these out in others, and you'll find them. Much of the idea of conversation is to discuss different topics, interests, and experiences in an attempt to find a common bond between the people. This is what relationships and friendships are made out of. Body language and receptivity. Another important aspect of conversation comes not from the tongue, but from the body. That's right. In fact, nonverbal messages, or body language as it is called, communicate many of our feelings and attitudes before words are even spoken, and in addition, project our level of receptivity to others. Poor body language is probably the main reason for short, unsustained conversations. The following nonverbal softening techniques can make your first impressions work for and not against you. A softener is a verbal or nonverbal gesture which hopefully makes your listener more responsive to you. Because your body language speaks before you do, project a positive and friendly image, When you do, you are already sending the message, I'm friendly and willing to communicate if you are. Each letter of the word soften, S-O-F-T-E-N, stands for a nonverbal technique and encourages others to talk with you. The S stands for smile. A smile is the strongest indicator of a friendly and open attitude and a willingness to communicate. It is a signal sent with the hope that the other person will smile back. When you smile at a person, it demonstrates the fact that you have noticed them in a good way. This usually is considered a compliment and will make the other person feel good about you and themselves. The result? The person will usually smile back. By sending out friendly messages, you're going to get friendly messages back. When you couple a warm smile with a friendly hello, you will be pleasantly surprised at the positive response. It is the easiest way to break the ice and show someone you've noticed them. O in the word soften stands for open posture. Many people don't realize their closed posture is the cause of many of their conversational problems. Typical closed posture is sitting with your arms and legs crossed, with the hands covering part of the mouth. This might be considered a thinking pose, but who wants to start a conversation with someone who is sitting deep in thought? Rather, keep your hands away from your mouth and try not to cross your arms for any length of time. Crossed arms can indicate a defensive frame of mind and thus not particularly favorable to outside contact. It can also indicate a sign of displeasure or impatience, neither of which encourage people to open up to you. Open posture is most effective when you place yourself within communicating distance, that is, within about 5 feet or so of the other person. Take care, however, not to violate someone's personal space by getting too close. Of course, if the situation calls for it, the closer the better. However, be sensitive to the other person's feelings and signals they are sending you. And remember, there are cultural differences in what is considered a comfortable talking distance between strangers. Open posture sends out the signals of openness and receptivity. F in the word soften means forward lean. This is actually another element of open posture. Leaning forward slightly while a person is talking to you indicates interest on your part and shows you're listening. This is a direct compliment to the person talking and will encourage them to continue. Oftentimes, people will lean back with their hands over their mouths or chins in the thinking posture, giving off the signal of judgment or maybe even boredom. Since most people do not feel comfortable when they think they are being judged, this posture tends to inhibit conversation. It is better to lean forward slightly in a casual and natural way. This makes the other person feel like what they're saying is of interest to you, and thus encourages them to continue. T in the word soften stands for touch. In our culture, the most acceptable form of first contact between two people who have just met is a warm handshake. This is true when meeting members of the same or opposite sex, and not just in business. In fact, in nearly every situation, a handshake is a safe and positive way of showing a friendly and open attitude towards the other person. I encourage you to be the first to extend your hand in greeting. Couple this with a friendly hi and a big smile, and you will have gone a long way to open the channels of conversation between you and the other person. Sometimes men feel that it is not right to offer their hand to a woman. They say they would feel stupid if the woman didn't shake their hand, and they would be left there with their hand hanging in the air. In fact, Emily Post says it is perfectly acceptable for a man to offer a handshake to a woman, and it would be quite rude for them to refuse the greeting. Also, women sometimes say they feel too forward if they offer their hand to a man. They sometimes think the man will get the wrong idea if they are first to offer a handshake. In fact, of all the people polled on the subject, there is nearly 100% agreement. Everyone likes the contact. It is a safe and non-threatening form of touch for both parties. This keeps personal defenses down and tends to create an atmosphere of receptivity between the people. Other forms of touch should be done in a friendly and non-threatening manner. End the conversation with a warm handshake or double handshake, that is, two hands around one. A bright smile, and a friendly statement like,
I've really enjoyed talking with you. Let's get together again.
Now that's a good way to end a conversation. E in the word soften stands for eye contact. Perhaps the strongest of the nonverbal signals is sent through the eyes. Direct eye contact indicates you are interested in the other person and want to get to know more about them. Eye contact is extremely important in conversation because it says, I'm listening. Eye contact should be natural and not forced. It is perfectly okay to have short periods of eye contact while you look at other parts of the person's face, particularly their mouth. And when a person smiles at you in conversation, smile back, but always make an effort to return looking at a person directly in the eyes. Too much eye contact, on the other hand, can be counterproductive. If you stare at a person, it can make them feel uncomfortable and even suspicious as to your intent. It is not wise to use eye contact as a power trip on the people you meet. This will usually result in a negative response from the other person. If you have trouble with eye contact, try these few suggestions. Start with short periods of eye contact, maybe only a second or two. Look into the pupils of the other person's eyes and smile. Then look at the other features of the person's face and head. Hair, nose, lips, and even earlobes. There is a 6-inch diameter around the eyes that can provide you with a visual pathway. Remember, after a few moments, return to looking into the other person's eyes, allowing enough time for both of you to look at one another. Try to increase the amount of time you have eye contact as the conversation continues. Avoiding eye contact can make the other person feel you are anxious, dishonest, or genuinely disinterested in the conversation and the company. So look into the eyes of those you talk with. It is a good technique for keeping conversation going. N in the word soften stands for nod. A nod of the head is a gesture that indicates you are listening and understand what is being said. It generally signals approval and encourages the other person to continue speaking. A nod of the head, coupled with eye contact, a warm smile, and a friendly hi, is an excellent way of greeting people on the street or anywhere else. It is important to understand that all the nonverbal gestures are softeners and alone don't replace verbal communication. However, when they are used in conjunction with one another, they tend to give off an impression of an open and friendly attitude to the people you come in contact with. There are 4 basic steps to starting a conversation, though they do not always occur in order. They are, 1, ask ritual questions. 2, use active listening. 3, seek information. And 4, use self-disclosure. Let's first look at ritual questions. Ritual questions are commonly asked and easy to answer requests for information. They are called ritual questions because although they are requests for information, their real purpose is to convey this message.
I'm interested in getting to know you better.
The easiest way I know to break the ice is one of these 3 ways. I notice something positive about the person I wish to talk with, and in a friendly way, give them a compliment based on what they are wearing or doing. I quickly follow the compliment with a ritual question. A second way is to notice something this person is carrying, maybe a book or musical instrument, for example, and ask a question based on the object. A third way to break the ice is to make a comment or ask a question based on the situation you both are in. This can be either a request for assistance, like asking for a recommendation for a good place to eat in the neighborhood, to offering assistance if you see someone in need of help, like giving directions. All 3 techniques are followed by ritual questions. Ritual questions can be phrased in either a closed-ended or open-ended way. A closed-ended ritual question requires an answer of only a yes or a no, or a few short words. While they are useful for breaking the ice, they should be followed up with an open-ended question. These are questions which encourage the other person to elaborate on their answer and provide them with an opportunity to reveal facts, opinions, feelings, and most of all, plenty of free information. Closed-ended questions usually begin with are, do, who, what, when, where, and which? Open-ended questions commonly start with how, why, and in what way. What can be used as a starter for both open and closed-ended questions? Here are some common examples of both.
How did you go about finding that apartment?
In what ways do you think the country has changed?
Why did you choose that particular field?
How did you ever wind up in that part of the world?
Where are you from? Are you enjoying your stay here?
What do you do when you're not working?
How long have you been in this area? Do you like it here?
Where are you originally from?
What brings you to this part of the world?
What kind of work do you do?
How long have you been working here?
These are just some examples of open and closed ritual questions. Remember, these requests for information are really just a way of sending this message.
I'm interested in getting to know you.
It's very important that you can answer as well as ask ritual questions when meeting new people. Most people feel more comfortable answering expected, easy requests for information. Some people feel that they may offend the other person by asking ritual questions. In fact, the opposite is usually true. Most people feel flattered when someone notices them in a positive way and shows their interest through curiosity. Some people feel uncomfortable telling others what they do and are even offended when others ask them this all too common ritual question. This closed attitude is not conducive to opening the channels of communication and will usually serve as a barrier to continuing conversation. Rather, it is better to be able to tell others what you do in a few short sentences, giving away plenty of free information for the other person to pick up on. In addition to opening the channels of communication, ritual questions will also allow for the people to seek related experiences, values, and goals in the people they come in contact with. It serves as a quick means of determining if you would like to get to know this person better. Ritual questions not only help you to find out other people's backgrounds, but also to find out their hot buttons. That is, what really turns them on, the really big things in their life. Asking ritual questions is sort of like fly fishing. You may have to cast a few times before you get a bite, but when you do, watch out. Look for visual cues for people's hot buttons. People often wear buttons, clothing, carry items, or participate in the activities that represent their strong personal interests. The sooner you find out the person's hot button, the better conversation you'll have. Some people say that this kind of conversation is dull and boring. The fact is that conversations that do not get past the ritual phase rarely go on for very long. Ritual questions let people reveal basic personal facts to one another, a little at a time. By focusing on the free information provided, the participants can explore each other's experiences and interests in a natural way. Ask ritual questions when you want to break the ice or change the topic of conversation. If your last ritual question got a brief response, try another until you get an enthusiastic answer. When you do, follow it up with several information-seeking, open-ended questions. When the conversation on that topic runs its course, go back to another ritual question based on other free information provided by you or the other person. Remember to keep the exchange of information balanced and always search for a connection between you and the other person in terms of experiences, goals, feelings, and most important, when a connection is made, let the other person know it by saying, "Oh, really? That's a coincidence? Me too." A final point of ritual questions is to introduce yourself to the other person. When there is a bit of a pause between topics, it is a good time to say, "By the way, my name's Don." The other person will almost always respond by introducing themselves back to you. If your hand is free and theirs is too, offer a handshake and a big smile and say, "Nice to meet you." And use that person's name right away and as often as you can. Not only will this help you to remember their name, but using a person's name is one of the easiest and most meaningful compliments you can give to someone. When someone introduces themselves to you, say their name out loud and silently to yourself. Then, quickly think of someone you know with the same name and associate them with your new acquaintance. See if there are any visual cues you can use to help you remember their name. The more associations you make, the more likely you will remember their name. If you forget a person's name, it is perfectly fine to say, "I'm sorry, but I've forgotten your name," or, "What's your name again?" If you try these ritual question ice-breaking techniques, you'll discover they really work, and being the first to say hello won't be a problem anymore. Now you may be saying, okay, I ask a few ritual questions, but then what do I say? I always run out of things to talk about. Know what to say by listening. Listen carefully for key words, facts, feelings, and most important, free information as the person speaks. And remember it. Don't think about what you're going to say next, because while you're thinking, you are not listening. Use plenty of good body language, especially eye contact, smiling, and nodding. This will encourage the other person to continue speaking. Ask follow-up questions based on free information. Be enthusiastic. If the person doesn't ask you a ritual question or corresponding question within a relatively short period of time, volunteer some free information of your own related to the topic of discussion. By using active listening, you are demonstrating your interest in the person, and you are paying them a personal compliment by showing it. Find out the person's hot button as quickly as possible. Find out those really big things in their life. Be aware of iceberg statements. That is where 90% of the statement is under the water and is just waiting for a question to surface. Use words like, oh really? How? In what way? Then what did you do? You don't say. That's exciting. All these encourage people to elaborate further. Try to share in the person's enthusiasm for the topic, and you will be giving them a big personal compliment. Encourage them to really get into it. By you showing the curiosity and interest and willingness to listen, you are sending a clear message. Talk to me. I'm willing to listen. After you have said hi and asked a few ritual questions and have used active listening, then seek more information based on the free information you have heard. You can take advantage of free information and control the general direction of the conversation by asking open-ended follow-up questions. You can also change the topic of the conversation simply by saying something like this.
I heard you mention earlier that you lived in Hawaii. What were you doing there?
Or?
I've always been curious. What's it like there?
Sometimes you will get some free information based upon a general impression. Then you can say something like,
you seem to know a lot about cars. Are you a mechanic?
Or?
How do you happen to know so much about foreign affairs? How did you get into it?
Remember, if you ask a closed-ended question, follow it with an open-ended question. This will give the person an opportunity to give away plenty of free information. When you ask open-ended questions, it is also a signal to the other person that you can get involved in what interests them. Always search for the other person's hot button, and when you discover a common interest or experience, let the other person know it right away with some free information of your own. When discussing areas of professional interest, take care not to ask for free advice. For example, if you meet a dentist, don't say this. Oh, you're a dentist? How convenient. Say, I've got this tooth here, and I was wondering if you could just take a look at it. Most professionals don't mind discussing their work if they think you're interested, but resent being hit up for a free office visit. Asking personal questions always requires particular sensitivity to the other person's feelings and level of receptivity. If you phrase a personal question like, are you married, with a softener such as, do you mind if I ask you a personal question? Or, excuse me for being so direct, the person will be more likely to answer you. I strongly suggest avoiding traditional conversational taboos like dwelling on death, gory crimes, unhappy events, or personal gossip. Avoid getting things off your chest, telling secrets, over-dramatizing small events in your life, or calling attention to a problem that the person you are talking to cannot easily solve. All these will leave a negative impression on the person you are talking with. Remember, avoid starting conversations with difficult questions. It is better to ask simple questions that people expect and can easily answer. This will put them at ease and allow them to get to know you through personal self-disclosure. Personal self-disclosure completes the conversational cycle of asking a ritual question, active listening, and seeking information. Self-disclosure is a way of letting others know who you are on your own terms. The information you share with the people you meet will determine how they get to know you. Make it as positive as possible by sharing your hot buttons and the really big things in your life as well as your opinions, values, goals, and feelings. Through self-disclosure, you can tell others what you like to do for fun, where you're from, what you're shooting towards, and very important, if you're available for future contact. Some people have what has been called habitual secrecy. They like to keep all their goodies to themselves. I encourage you to share your good secrets with these people that you meet, and sooner or later you're going to bump into someone with similar passions, and then look out. The trick to sustaining conversations is simple. Balance the seeking of information and the disclosure of information. The people participating should be disclosing and requesting information at about the same rate. As the conversational partners continue to ask and disclose information, trust in each other will grow, and the self-disclosures will broaden and become more significant, sometimes even downright personal. Normally, there are four levels through which self-disclosures proceed. The first are cliché greetings like, "Hey, how you doing?" or "How's the kids?" or "What's happening?" or "How have you been?" or "What have you been up to lately?" In all these greetings, the real message being sent is an open and friendly attitude, and if the situation permits, availability for conversation. After people exchange greetings, they usually exchange basic personal facts like what they do, where they're from, what they like, and lots of free information for the other person to pick up on. The third level of self-disclosure is revealing your opinions and views on different topics. You can tell others what you honestly think about the many things that shape the world around us. When you express your ideas to others, try to do so in an open manner and encourage others to share their opinions and ideas with you. Conversation is an exchange of views, not a competition with a winner and a loser. Discuss the other person's ideas and give them more of your own. Your open attitude will go a long way to improve the receptivity of your conversational partner. Remember, discussion, not arguing, is an excellent way of sustaining a conversation. The fourth level of self-disclosure is your personal feelings. These are usually the hardest kind of self-disclosures to make because they require us to reveal our emotions. Revealing feelings to the people you meet will give them a real sense of who you are and what you're sensitive to. When you disclose your hopes, dreams, loves, joys, and sorrows, people will be able to identify with you because we all share those same emotional experiences. Use I and feeling language when you describe how you feel and think. For example, "I know I can do the job if they just give me a chance. I sure hope I get it." Or, if you're talking to the right person, you could say something like, "I feel like the most important thing in the world right now is you." These are two good examples of I and feeling language. Avoid these two common pitfalls. Don't project a false image. If you exaggerate your good qualities and hide all your faults and failures, people will become suspicious of you. Sometimes people will not entirely believe what you tell them, even if it's true. Be sure to disclose plenty of specific details, including names, dates, and places. Be prepared to reveal a few negatives about your situation to balance the picture of yourself that you present. Let discussion take place along with the disclosures, so you are sure the other person is taking you seriously. Let others in on your goals and struggles, and you'll be pleasantly surprised by their encouragement and sympathy for your endeavors. You never know, you might be talking to someone who can help you along. And by the same token, when someone discloses a problem to you and you can offer help, do it. You'll make a friend right away. The other common pitfall in self-disclosures is holding back out of fear of boring the other person. Most people are interested in making new friends and contacts. You don't have to worry about entertaining the people you meet, but be upbeat and positive as possible. People value personal contact, and when you share part of your life with them, this personal contact is made. This is most important. If you balance the exchange of ritual questions and self-disclosure, boring conversation shouldn't be a problem. By fishing around with ritual questions, you should be able to find areas of mutual interest with just about anybody you come in contact with. Your desire for one-to-one contact will be very much appreciated by the other person. and you'll feel pretty good about it too. Starting and sustaining conversations with strangers is easy if you know how, and are willing to take a risk and be the first to say hello. Here are some final tips. Change your routine and do something you've always wanted to do. Maybe it's sailing, bowling, or playing bridge. Just get out there and do it. Put yourself in the situations that you enjoy. Be open to new ideas, experiences, and activities. Make an effort to see the people you meet again by exchanging telephone numbers. Cards come in handy for that. Accept people for who they are, and they'll be much more likely to accept you for who you are. Stop worrying about what people think of you, and just be yourself.